The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
I'm hoping the Big Ten has to modify their system for us.
It's probably like getting grade 10 sandpaper rubbed on your face every day.
I mean, we say it all the time, whether, you know, there's two types of turds. You're a sinker or you're a floater, but you're still a turd, right? I mean,
we are about players and players playing the plays and not necessarily the plays.
Welcome to the Varsity Club Podcast. My name is Derek Peterson. I'm happy to be joined this week by Hill Varsity's own Greg Smith. Greg, hello. How are you?
I am very well. I'm happy to be back on the pod, man. It feels like it's been a long time. It probably hasn't, but it feels like a long time.
It has been quite a bit. I haven't gotten to talk to you in person. Like, we texted a little bit when you sent me this, but I haven't gotten to talk to you in person about this top 10 list of rappers that you sent me a couple weeks ago. Will Compton shared his 10 greatest rappers of all time. And you sent me the list, and I'm sure if people listening to this have seen the list, they will disagree with the list in some form or another. But we're not going to flame Will Compton because, you know, it's his opinion. He's entitled to his opinion. When it comes to art forms, which music is, everybody sees things and hears things a different way. That's fine. But I do want to ask you real quick, because I was talking to my wife about it. Mm-hmm. And she was like, who would be on your list? And so I said, okay, well, I feel like there are a handful of musts, like guys that or people that have to be on a top 10 list, regardless of who you are. They're indisputable top 10 people. And I was running through and I got to nine. I got to okay. Nine must-haves. And I said, Kanye has to be on there. And she stopped me and she's like, wait, Kanye? Why does Kanye have to be on there? And I was like, why? Because it's Kanye. Kanye has to be on there. So now I'm curious, because I have nine, and I will be happy to share them with you if you want to hear them. But do you have like a group of musts that are on a top 10 rappers of all time list? And how many do you have if you have a group?
Yeah, after seeing that list from Will, I did jot down some names, and I probably got to a strong seven. It's funny, in the first version of like just kind of quickly off the top of my head running through it, I did not have Kanye on the initial list, which is bizarre for me, but he would be on there. But yeah, it probably a strong seven. But really the 10 that I would have, I don't know how many of them you're arguing with, like, to be honest. Like, it's really there are a strong group of people that you're just like, okay, that guy has to be on there. Like, just has to be. Like, you're not going to make one of these lists and leave like Biggie off of it. Like, that would just be an example of someone. It would just be weird.
Yeah. Okay. Here's my nine. I'm curious if you quibble with any of the nine. Okay. Eminem has to be on it.
Yeah.
Biggie has to be on it.
Correct.
Tupac has to be on it.
Agreed.
Jay-Z has to be on it. Kendrick has to be on it. Lil Wayne has to be on it. Nas has to be on it.
Mm-hmm.
J. Cole. And Kanye.
We have one quibble. I would not have J. Cole on there. I am not a big J. Cole fan.
Really?
I don't know why. Yeah, he doesn't grab me in the same way that he does other people for some reason. There's a couple songs here and there that I'm like, hey, that's really dope. But the one that would, well, there's two that would have to be on there for me that you didn't mention. Black Thought and Andre 3000. Those are two that I always, and whenever I make lists like this of greatest rappers of all time, those two are definitely always on the list for me.
Andre 3000 would be in the 10th spot.
Yeah. But you can get to 10 really fast.
Yeah, you can. Yeah.
Really fast. But half of them not that Will Compton name.
Yeah.
Sorry.
My wife, like MGK is might not be top 50.
right.
If we're being completely honest. When my wife and I were talking about it, she's like, well, I mean, like 10, you got, I mean, Beastie Boys at 3 is too much, but Beastie Boys for 10, we could have a conversation. She brought up Nicki, just in terms of like the way Nicki like moved the industry forward for women. Andre 3000, obviously. Snoop. Neither of us mentioned Snoop.
Oh, I have him on my 10. He's in the 10. But he's one of the ones that I feel like people will debate a little bit. But I think Snoop needs to be in there.
What about Wu-Tang?
I would not have them on there. But man, they'd be just on the cusp. I would wonder, like, I feel like I'm missing someone as a female MC. Like, I thought Lil' Kim, Queen Latifah. Like, there's a couple others that, like, that would be worthy of discussion. Like, that's an interesting one as well. But Nicki Minaj is so popular. I have always been a big
Missy Elliott fan.
Missy Elliott. Yeah, probably Missy Elliott. There we go. I've seen these lists that include Lauryn Hill. Like, I don't know that I would.
I've seen them, too. Yeah.
But if you can, I think that, and it's really wild considering, like, it's really just one solo album that we're talking about with her, but which is just incredible.
It's tough, man. Like we said, you get to 10 fast. Before we move on to the next topic, I want to take a second and thank my sponsor, FSC Edge. FSC Edge integrates AI technologies, case management tools, and augmented operators to optimally process patent documents quickly and accurately. FSC Edge supports some of the world's largest patent offices, including the European Patent Office, the German Patent and Trademark Office, and the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. Hey, that seems like a pretty big deal. The team over at FSC Edge is always looking for new members to come on board. You won't be on the phone all day. You won't be customer facing, which means no stuffy suits and ties. That's nice. You will be doing impactful work on a national scale and learning about patents. Folks who've worked with FSC Edge have all come away saying the same kinds of things: affable, inviting, accepting, welcoming, easy to work with. Check out available jobs today by going to jobs@fsc.com. Let's talk about another list. The reason that I have you on the podcast today, I saw a tweet from On3 Sports this week that listed coaches on the hot seat. It's got a big, bright red picture of Scott Frost right in the center of the graphic. Scott Frost is firmly on their hot seat list, but they have a few other coaches. And so I kind of just want to talk to you about the hot seat as we move into the season, who you think is on it, who, if I sent you this tweet, so if there was anybody on this On3 list that you saw that you completely disagreed with, we can talk about that. They also had Scott Satterfield on there at Louisville, and given recent comments from Jeff Brohm about Louisville, I thought it would be really interesting to get your take on kind of what's going on with him. Kind of curious about your thoughts there, and maybe we can make Brandon's ears bleed a little bit as we talk about a former Appalachian State guy. So let's talk about Scott Frost first, who led off this hot seat graphic tweet for On3 Sports. They've got his record up there, 15-29. They've got his picture up there, bigger than everybody else's.
It's the biggest
Scott
one.
Frost is the poster child for the 2022 college football hot seat. Where are you at right now? Do you think that the buyout reduction signals, or do you think that Trev is like, no, let's cool it, let's just see how the season plays out and we'll reassess next year?
I think that if this was an outside looking in situation, if we remove like how deep into Nebraska football we are at this point, and we switched all of the variables and we put it at Auburn, for example, we would look at this and say, yeah, he's definitely the top coach on the hot seat and he should watch his back, right? I think that would be kind of the natural thing, and I think that's normal. And so I do think that even with all of the context and the what ifs, I think that it's fair to put Scott on that big of a hot seat and have that target on him. And the buyout reduction is really interesting to me because I think that it is something that is now – when it first happened, it was a huge talking point, right? It was all people were talking about. Then we went through this run where Nebraska had a successful offseason. People will laugh and say they won the offseason again. I'll make the joke for you. But that quiet.
There was substance this time.
There was substance this time. Like, and there actually was, like, I keep explaining it this way. I think Nebraska football and Scott Frost put itself in position to have a more successful season this year. that's all you really can ask for, I think, coming out of this offseason, especially one in which if you had told me that they could do some of the things that they've done on paper, I would have never believed you. If, you know, landing Oshawn Mathis, landing two quarterbacks that could probably start for you, bringing Mickey Joseph home, I think, which could prove to be the biggest thing of all, Mark Whipple coming in to be the new offensive coordinator, on and on the list. Like, I would not have thought Nebraska would be able to pull all of that off, given what had transpired with the 15 and 29 before that, because I thought that people would view Scott as more of a lame duck coach. So they put themselves in position. Now, he's earned all of this hot seat talk, but they also have a path to be able to come back from that, in large part because the schedule is so soft to start the season. Like, it just really is. Like, there's, every time I look back at it, I'm like, wait a second. Like, they've got a real shot here to start off the season pretty well, even if they're slightly worse than they were last year.
Yeah, I read the best endorsement of Mark Whipple that I think I've seen this past week. Jordan Addison was talking at a quarterback retreat thing that he was at. It was his first public comment since committing to USC, and somebody asked him, when did he first think about leaving Pitt and transferring? And you can choose to believe him, you can choose not to believe him, but what he said was that when Mark Whipple left in December, he first thought about going into the transfer portal. That feels like a pretty big endorsement of Mark Whipple as an offensive coordinator and as a guy who can put skill position players in positions to be successful.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. And it's funny that he came up because Nebraska had, what, three or four wide receivers on campus this weekend. I think every one of them that I talked to mentioned that they sat down with Mark Whipple and went over Jordan Addison film. So that's a good endorsement that he can now then continue to use and said, hey, he didn't want to leave me. He could sneak that in there too.
That's pretty good. So here's another guy that was on this on three hot seat list. And because of the context in which his situation was discussed, it reminded me of Scott Frost. So Chip Kelly was on this list from UCLA, even though he just agreed to a contract extension earlier this year with UCLA, but his record is 18-25 and he won three games and then four games in his first two seasons at UCLA. And it was brought up that Chip Kelly had interviewed at Florida before he picked the UCLA job. Maybe he interviewed or he just talked. I don't know if it's one of those, like, if the guy didn't accept, we didn't offer situations. I don't know if that's how coaches view this, but there was Florida interest and he was interested in Florida. And the way that it was framed was that if Chip Kelly had won three games and then four games at Florida, he absolutely would have been fired right away. He wouldn't have even gotten a third season at UCLA. He got a third season and then he got a fourth season and he won eight games. Scott Frost, there was also Florida interest. And I saw there's some reporting that has come out since, like, Frost has struggled at Nebraska that was like Florida didn't believe that he was mature enough for that job, or Florida wasn't, like, super interested in him, which, by the way, is bogus. It's bogus. Like, if Scott Frost had won 10 games in his second season at Nebraska, Florida would not be saying that.
Right.
But he didn't win 10 games. If Scott Frost had had this start, you think at Florida, do you think he would have made it 4 years?
No.
So what does that say about Nebraska? Does it anything? You think it says anything worthwhile?
Not worthwhile. Depending on how worthwhile you think it is that they have more patience with a native son. Like, I don't know if, and I don't know how worthwhile that is, but I think that that's absolutely the case, from anecdotal evidence and from Trev Alberts actually saying in his statement to retain Scott Frost, he's one of us. Like, and so part of me, though, on that, wants to be like, hey, that's actually kind of cool that they're sticking with their guy, and that we all too often in college football are quick to rip the Band-Aid off and fire a guy. The other part of me is saying, man, if he was somewhere else, this just wouldn't go this way, which it can also be true. I think both can be true at the same time, which makes this a really unique situation.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret, like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables. Ooh, yum. And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
One thing that I've always been curious about, and for some reason I've never asked you, so I'm going to ask you right now, as the recruiting guy, do recruits notice that patience? Like, have you heard that brought up, them talk about, like, them being committed to Frost or having patience with Frost, or, like, him being, quote-unquote, one of us? Like, does that ever get mentioned? Is it something that, like, resonates with any recruit that you've spoken with?
No. The only time I think that that's ever really come up, was it after the second year, maybe, or during the second year, when he got that contract extension that was kind of out of left field? It came up then, only because there was so much talk, I guess, on the recruiting trail that he was going to get fired, that they gave him that extension, and then that quieted that down. It came up then. Otherwise, it doesn't come up. And honestly, the thing that comes up now is how close they are, and that they just need more guys and more time, and he's building it for the long haul. Like, honestly, I'm kind of stunned that continues to come up over and over again, but it comes up all the time still.
They're close. Gonna be on Scott Frost's tombstone. Who else on this list caught your eye? This list of hot seat coaches caught your eye?
Well, there's two of them that really have my attention. The first one is Brian Harsin at Auburn. And it's really, we both laugh because really it's a situation where it just doesn't feel like they want him to be the coach. Like, he's 6-7 so far at Auburn.
Hold on. To jump from Nebraska to Auburn is like you're getting whiplash. You're getting whiplash because you got one situation where the program desperately wants it to work with the coach, even if it hasn't worked so far. You got another program that wasn't bad, and they're like, we have to find ways to get rid of this guy. We have to invent controversies and invent extramarital affairs to get rid of this guy.
Yes. And that's what makes it just, and it makes it so wild. Like, the Auburn thing is just, it ended up making everyone look bad in the situation somehow, like everyone involved in that Auburn situation, because you've got, like, Brian Harsin, who through no fault of his own kind of got caught up in this all, but then, like, the administration and the boosters, by the way, the players didn't look great when all of this was going on either, because a few too many of them taking to social media to take shots at people. Like, it was all a bizarre situation, which makes me, like, kind of interested to watch them, a lot more interested than I normally would be to watch Auburn football this year, and so that'll be fun to kind of see that play out. So he definitely caught my eye, because if they're not good, and if they start off if they started off like 1-3 or something like that, they're just going to fire him and say that, you know, they weren't good. So that's interesting to me. The other one, for a little bit different reason for me, is Scott Satterfield. And so I don't, Louisville football is not something I pay attention to a ton, but for this particular portion of it, it's really interesting to me because they really wanted him. They got him there. He had success prior to this. It seems like right now, recruits are buying in because they have one of the top classes, like sneakily, and one of the top classes in the 2023 cycle. And so whether or not that all falls apart, if they're not any good again, and Louisville decides to move on from him, like, I just don't know. And I also, Louisville is a school that I wonder if they shouldn't have more patience. Like, I don't understand why they would be in the situation to think that they should be out here competing for the national championship on a yearly basis. That part of it is always really interesting to me, because there are schools that just refuse to admit that. And it feels like Louisville is one of them at this point.
On Auburn, Harsin feels like a Coach Boone, remember the Titans, where, like, you lose one game and you're getting fired. Like, that's kind of the way I feel about Auburn right now. Like, the first game he loses, like, he's getting left on the tarmac.
Yeah, I mean, he could.
Satterfield is really interesting because Louisville, like, and I'm kind of like you, I don't pay too close attention to Louisville, but I do know Malik Cunningham, mm-hmm. I do know he's fun. And it seems like there's, it seems like that is the kind of player that they could really like build a, not really a brand around, but they could build like a little mini identity for themselves for these few years that he's been there.
Right.
And I feel like if you wanted to just blast Malik Cunningham content into the college football sphere, that would help with your visibility and help with like the coolness factor of your program and maybe help on the recruiting trail. I don't know. Maybe. Louisville just is like, what did they even, what was their record last year? I don't even know. I Louisville doesn't register on the map to me. And for
maybe that's part of the reason.
Maybe that's a problem. Yeah. For a program that had Lamar Jackson a couple years ago, a few years ago, and now has not to the same caliber, but a similarly entertaining quarterback in Malik Cunningham, I feel like they should be a little bit more fun than they are.
Yeah, maybe that's what they need. And maybe they need that, as they need an identity of fun or some sort of identity to begin with, that people can rally around, and that would make them more interesting and people would pay more attention to them. And maybe that would help the administration. There is one, the one guy on this list, though, that I've got to ask you about, because we've got to talk about this, because I saw him on the list and didn't realize that he wasn't already fired. How is Herm Edwards still the coach at Arizona State?
I was going to ask. This is the question that everybody wants to ask.
Like,
you know why Herm Edwards is still the head coach at Arizona State? Because his best friend is still the athletic director at Arizona State.
Like, that makes sense.
It's remarkable. They lost their softball coach, who won 40 games this past season. They lost their softball coach to Texas A&M this past week. And all of Twitter was like, we're done with Ray Anderson. Everybody's done with their athletic director, except for Arizona State. They continued at, like, basketball wasn't very good. Football. I mean, he's got, especially if you look, he's right under Scott Frost in this On3 graphic. So you see Scott Frost's name, and then you see a 15-29 record. Then you see Herm Edwards' name, and you see a 25-18 record. They finished 8-5 last year. They weren't a bad football team. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know, man. They got NCAA investigation going on, and he still has a head coaching job. And many people are asking, why does he still have a head coaching job? It's because his best friend is the athletic director. And like, if the NCAA is looking into anything, that's what they should be looking into.
That's amazing. I did not know that. That is amazing. I guess, you know, props for having friends in high places. But like, it's just weird. Like,
it was his agent in the NFL.
Okay, but it's weird that you would have a situation where you've got all these assistant coaches that had to leave college football, or, you know, you had to fire them. They're in trouble. You've got the NCAA looking down on them. Then it's obvious that the NCAA has whatever they need to have to drop the hammer on them if they want to, because you can really trace all of that stuff, especially about the visits. And it's really actually kind of interesting, because it just comes up in conversations with recruits. If you talk to recruits that were in that 2020 class, or 2021, sorry, class from the 2020 season, they'll tell you, like, oh yeah, the only place I was able to visit was Arizona State. Like, weird. Like, there's a guy on Nebraska's roster right now that said that to us in the spring. So like, it's just a really interesting situation that, I mean, it's not like they have to do much digging to figure out what happened at Arizona State. But Herm Edwards is still surviving. And he's the other, like, kind of crazy thing about that situation, too, to me, is that he's obviously a pretty good coach, right? Like, when he got hired, people thought it was wild. And we saw, like, the funny videos right away. Remember him talking about the mascot, and he was holding up the uniforms, and he was like, wow, we can get this stuff on, like, all of that stuff. And you thought, okay, there's no way this is going to work. Well, actually, on the field, it's been pretty decent. It's just that, you know, they're cheating, allegedly, I guess.
The other problem was that they lost a ton of people to the transfer portal, because it seemed like for a minute there, everybody was just bracing for Herm Edwards to get fired, and they lost everybody and then had a crap recruiting class. And the administration's just been like, no, we're keeping him.
Ride it out.
Mike Norvell at Florida State. At what point is Florida State actually good again? Because Miami's coming. Like, yeah, I know a lot of people are kind of out on Mario Cristobal as a developer of talent, but Miami is too good a program with too many resources to just continue to be kind of like floundering. Like, they're going to be good, especially under Mario. I think they're going to be good under Mario Cristobal. So for Florida State, like, you got to have some urgency there, man.
You definitely do, but I just don't, I don't understand. To me, Florida State is rapidly becoming that program where we're like, why aren't they better? Like, it just, they're going to start to be the default answer for this. And I don't know if it's, if Mike Norvell is the actual problem, if they need to get their NIL game stepped up, what needs to happen, but they've got to figure that out, because you can't be, and it's really, this in a way goes to all the big three in Florida, between Florida State, Florida, and Miami. Like, those teams cannot all be bad. Like, it just, it can't be a thing. And you can't continue to have Alabama and Georgia just poach the best Florida talent, now Ohio State trying to come down there more, and other schools. Like, it just can't be like that. One of them is going to have to rise up, for no other reason than one of them will figure out how to be the team of that group that keeps the Florida talent home. Like, one of them has to be able to do it. I think it's going to be Mario Cristobal, because he's the best recruiter of that group. But Mike Norvell, I don't know how much of a stomach they're going to have for firing another guy this quickly, because I think they're still paying the Willie Taggart buyout. I think that's still going. Like, so I don't think they want to do this again, but boy, it's going to be dicey for him if they have a bad season.
Does Willie Taggart belong on the all-finesse team?
Oh, yeah. He's sitting in the club next to Chandler Parsons. Like, he's in there. Yeah, he's in there.
There's some other interesting coaches on this list. Neil Brown at West Virginia. I didn't realize Neil Brown had already been at West Virginia for 4 years.
Wow.
It doesn't seem like it's been that long. Jeff Collins at Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech is interesting because they're obviously in Georgia, which, surprise, surprise, has quite a few athletes that you can pick from in recruiting. But Georgia Tech can't really pick.
Yeah, it's harder for them, man.
They're 9-25 through his first three seasons. And they did something that is like the opposite of what a lot of people in the, specifically in the media, want, like middling programs with little tradition to do to try to resurrect themselves in a Power Five conference, and that's play the triple option. Georgia Tech decided to go away from the triple option, and it has not worked at all. 9-25. I think they've won 7 ACC games in 3 years. Not great. Chip Kelly at UCLA, mentioned him. Scott Satterfield at Louisville. We'll talk about Jeff Brown in a second. But first, let's say the season goes poorly for Nebraska. Mm. Not forecasting like who's going to be available or who they could potentially get. On a scale of 1 to 10, how interested would you be in seeing Nebraska say, you know what, triple option, it's what we're doing?
I would be interested just to see if, like, we finally make all the folks happy that always scream about that. And there are people both in the national media, local media, and fans that all kind of proclaim that that's the way that Nebraska needs to go. So that part of it would be interesting just to see if it worked. I don't think it would work, but it would be a fun storyline to see it all unfold. But, man, I don't know. Just personally, I don't want to go cover triple option football. Sorry. I know someone's going to yell at me.
Brandon.
Yeah, it's an important person to yell at me. But no, I would not want to see it, but I do think it would be interesting.
Would it be easier, harder, or about even to recruit to a triple option attack based on where they are regionally and where recruiting is right now?
I actually think it would be easier to recruit to in some ways, because I think that you could find the quarterbacks because they're not as in demand, right? If you can just find the best kind of dual threat guy who's more, even more of a runner than he is a passer, I think you could find that. I do think that you could develop a pipeline of Midwestern offensive linemen to be able to play in that and still like kind of supplement that with maybe some guys outside of the region. I'm always fascinated, and this has been a real strong local thing here, about how Nebraska has fallen off so much at running back. Like, they should always have good running backs, and I think that Brian Applewhite will do a better job. And that running back room is interesting this year, but I do still think you could get the running backs. But the big change would be all these wide receivers that Mickey Joseph is bringing in here that are just kind of seemingly tripping over themselves to get to Lincoln now, that would go away. Like, it just would. I mean, as I talk it out, you could convince me that it's at least interesting.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Well, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
Yeah, I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Mickey Joseph's not sticking around for a triple option offense.
No.
Not happening. It does bring up, like, an interesting, I mean, I know we talked about this when, as Nebraska was going through the process of trying to fill out Frost's staff and find these new assistant coaches, but, like, as you've kind of seen Mickey Joseph go to work, and as you've seen what Brian Applewhite brings to the table, what Raiola brings to the table, as you've seen Whipple at work, does it feel like those coaches acknowledge that this is, like, potentially just a one-year thing?
It feels like there's urgency. I don't know if they would term it a one-year thing, or if they hope that they can get to have it fully mesh. And I guess that way, selfishly, of course, they want that, right? But I think that there is definite urgency, because I think that really all of the kind of goodwill that you build back up and the pushing, resetting of the clock that you get with both fans, administration, and recruits of retooling and overhauling your staff, like, that goes out of the window immediately, I think, if you go out and win 3 or 4 games. Like, I just think it's going to be really hard to,
well, not even that long. If they lose to Northwestern, all that's out the window.
Oh yeah, I still believe that. Like, we had a mailbag question about that not that long ago. Like, if the season is essentially over if they lose to Northwestern, I said absolutely. It's going to be miserable around here if that were to happen. Because yes, that game is extremely, extremely important for them, especially considering what the games that they have following that, to, like, games that they should win. If you can start off in Dublin against Northwestern conference game and win it, that helps. If you lose that game, all bets are off. And but the wild thing is on the flip side of that,
they might cancel the game the week later and just stay an extra week in Dublin.
Right. Like, we got more sightseeing and educational things to do.
The plane broke down. There's no
right,
planes
weird,
left to get home.
Weird. No pilots available. They all left. But on the flip side of that, though, you don't feel that way about Northwestern at all. Northwestern, if Nebraska beats Northwestern, you would still think, oh, yeah, Northwestern might make a run at being able to win the Big Ten West. Like, because Northwestern seems to bounce back from these things or have those early season struggles.
Another team who could make a run at the Big Ten West is Purdue. Do you think this is Jeff Brohm's last season? Do you think if that Louisville job comes open, based on what we heard Jeff Brohm say recently with Louisville, he talked about he wanted to stick things out at Purdue. He didn't talk about turning down Louisville because he loves Purdue and wants to stay at Purdue for the rest of his career. He talked about timing, if I remember those quotes correctly. He was talking about timing. Well, it's been, what, 5 years now? He was a year before Frost at Purdue, 5 or 6 years?
Yeah, I think he was the year before.
This is the best quarterback he's had, Aiden O'Connell. If they have a good year, makes it pretty easy for him to ride off into the sunset and go back home and go to the alma mater and try to restore Louisville. Do you think they're going to have a good year?
I think they have the potential to have a good year. I like some of the pieces. I like the pieces that they have on defense. And I always just kind of have faith that they'll be pretty good, at least on offense, just because he's really good at coaching offense, right? So I do think that they have a strong potential to have a good year. And I really think that if they have a good year, he's leaving, going to Louisville, because then Scott Satterfield gets fired. And then Jeff Brohm is the guy to try to salvage that recruiting class, including, I think their Louisville recruiting class is led by, is it? Oh, I just lost the name. The quarterback camp guy has a son. It's like, oh man, I'm sorry. This is awful podcasting. It's Steve something. Steve Clarkson, maybe? Like something like that. He has a son that's a highly rated recruit at quarterback, and he's committed to that Louisville class. And so he could come in and pitch to him, hey, you can stay. I've had great quarterbacks in my time, all the wide receivers that I've put into the league, all of that sort of thing. And they could make that thing work. I think that lines up perfectly for Jeff Brohm to ride off into the sunset, because, there's only so far you're going to push Purdue.
Pierce Clarkson.
Clarkson, yeah.
The four-star quarterback, St. John Bosco, California. Only so far you can push Purdue. Is there only so far you can push Louisville?
There is. I made that argument earlier. That's definitely the case. But Louisville's also home for him, right? So that makes a difference.
What side of the ACC is Louisville on? Are they on Clemson's side? Do you know off the top of your head? If not, I can look it up.
I do not know off the top of my head.
Yeah, it'd be interesting, depending on the kind of season that they have, because he hasn't had great quarterbacks at Purdue, but he's developed useful quarterbacks, and he's developed guys that do what he wants them to do pretty well. I guess
sometimes by a nice weird rotation, right? Like, we figure it out.
I guess just by way of like geography, recruiting might be a little bit easier at Louisville. But it gets into an interesting discussion, which is the better job? Because like, then you start talking about Iowa, Wisconsin. Is Wisconsin really what it was maybe 5 years ago? Are they on the downswing? You could talk about maybe trying to like wait out Kirk Ferentz, or at least take advantage of however long he continues to employ his son as the offensive coordinator.
Right.
You've got Nebraska that isn't Nebraska. You know, if you're Jeff Brohm, you say, well, we could maybe win the Big Ten West this year. And then what does that do for my recruiting here? Maybe I get another quarterback and we just run it back. Because the other thing is, he's had no issue recruiting wide receivers and getting skill talent to come there. And they've gotten a handful of pretty high profile defensive recruits to come. One of them just got drafted in the first round. That's an interesting spot.
The only thing is that I just wonder about your year-to-year sustainability at Purdue, because I do think it's more of a, you can catch lightning in a bottle and go on a run. But those programs that you just named, even when they're not that good or they're not at the level that they're accustomed to being at, they can still be pretty salty. Like Wisconsin on the downswing is still going to be tough for Purdue to beat on a consistent basis. And the same goes for Iowa, right? Nebraska is what it is.
Big Ten West.
Yeah, like it's just tough. Like I feel like, wow, and that's always the conundrum with the Big Ten West, right? Is that on one hand, you're like, man, this is winnable. Like, we just got to get here, here, and here, and we could do this thing. We can go on a run. But on the other hand, it becomes incredibly difficult to actually pull that off because the teams are so jumbled up, and any one of those teams can really beat you, and you just never know which one it's going to be. Like, it's just an incredibly weird division, I think.
So the part, if, well, we should couch this, because if part of the, like, the calculus for whether you stay at Purdue or go to Louisville, or really like any job that's about to come open here in the next couple of years, divisions are about to go away. We're not going to have to deal with divisions anymore. Louisville is on the Clemson side of the ACC at the current moment. So I've got Florida State, NC State, and Clemson that he would have to deal with over there if that remained the case. I don't know how much longer. Eight conference games versus nine conference games. I bet if you're a head coach looking to make a run at things, eight conference games looks a little bit better than nine conference games, especially if the conference is strong. Like the Big Ten is, I can't imagine if you gave every Big Ten coach the option of, hey, you're going to play eight conference games versus nine conference games, and you're going to have a little bit better chance of getting in the college football playoff. Like, I know that they've said that they prefer nine or even more. Some of them have. Mm-hmm. But why would you prefer that over eight games?
I have no idea.
In your non-conference.
Yeah, I have no idea why you would want to do that. Like, I think if you just did a blind test and like, hey, here, everybody's going to vote. We're going to do a blind vote. Everyone votes. And then we're just going to do what the results say. I bet they would go back to eight. If it was anonymous, they would end up going back to eight.
Is it just like TV money from the extra Big Ten game that you think keeps it at nine? The athletic directors that want to keep it at nine?
Yeah, and if the TV deal is going to get even bigger, I do think that having that extra conference game inventory is worthwhile TV-wise. I don't think it's worthwhile coaching-wise. I wouldn't want it for that purpose. But at the same time, that TV money then helps them. So it's just kind of a thing that they just got to deal with.
One more question for you, Greg, and then I'll get you out of here. One name that is surprisingly going to come available, a job that's going to come open or a name that's going to become available in December of this year. Off the cuff, who are you thinking?
Man, off the cuff, one name. This is really tough. I'm going to go I'm going
to
go way off the board and say that this is Dabo's last season at Clemson.
Whoa.
I'll go way off the board. There we go.
You started to say way off the board, and I thought, Nick Saban?
Yeah. I think he's just going to go until, like, he needs to go to a home. Like,
he wins a national title. What happens if he wins another national title?
He wins the next one after that. Like, I don't know what that was. It's a fascinating thing because we definitely are at that point where if you're a recruit, especially at the level that he recruits, like, man, when he's recruiting Arch Manning, this Arch, like, hey, coach, I know you say you're going to be here, but I really don't believe you. Like, that's just kind of tough. Like, that would be really difficult to believe that he's going to be there for the next wave of guys coming in.
That's fair. That's all I got for you, man. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man.
It was good to talk to you again. Happy to talk about rappers and get your take on why you hate Kanye. Miss the old Kanye.
I was thinking that in my head as you said that.
Miss the old Kanye. We'll be back next week with another podcast. In the meantime, keep reading hailvarsity.com. Read all of Greg Smith's work. It's excellent. Go to hailvarsity.com/subscribe. Use the coupon code VARSITY. Get your subscription. Yearbook is also coming out soon, but I believe at the time of recording this, it is too late to subscribe to Hail Varsity, if I've got my information correct, to get the yearbook. But you should still be able to pick it up on newsstands as an individual copy. Is that correct, Greg?
That is correct.
Yeah, when it comes out. Cool. So find a way to get the yearbook in your hands. Also, Greg has his own podcast, the Straight Up Breakdown podcast. Listen to that every week. It's excellent. Subscribe, leave him a review. Shouts to you guys for listening to this show every week. Shouts to Cam for producing every week. And shouts to Greg one more time for coming on this podcast this week. And we'll talk to you guys next week.
A Huda Media Production.